Ashland Autumn. The almond blossoms are coming into full bloom here on Mallorca. The Spanish landscape is ripe with sweet smells and white petalic visions. This reminds me of my favorite time of year in North America, the autumn harvest. One day in late September of 2005, as I was walking through the mission to work at the Raw restaurant, the wind blew, and I smelled apples ripening on bountiful trees up in Oregon and Washington. A sense of longing to be in cool fall weather up in the mountains where I could take part in the harvest and watch the leaves oxidize and turn wondrous shades of yellow, orange, and red infused into me. When I finished my walk and arrived at work, which was already on its way to being distilled out of my reality, I began to ask around for people to cover my shifts so I could take 10 days off to wander around up in Oregon and see what found me there. When I left work later that day, my shifts were covered. In order to raise money for my harvest trip, I held a harvest dinner. I cooked a 5-course organic vegan dinner for 12 people in the grand dining room of the house I was living in. I decorated the table with leaves, pumpkins, squash, apples, and autumn flowers. All of the food and wine came from local organic farms. My friends and acquaintances placed their monetary donations in a hollowed-out gourd. I harvested enough money for a round-trip train ticket, food, and 10 nights of camping. I felt blessed. This trip really meant a lot to me, so in the time leading up to it, I prepared myself by reading Black Elk Speaks and making a CD of my favorite songs by the band Explosions in the Sky, who play a mesmerizing atmospheric West Texas guitar rock. I also asked my friend Jack if he would like to join me for the last weekend of the trip. He agreed to meet me there, basically, wherever I ended up, because I had no idea where I was going. I only knew that I wanted to be up in Oregon. I bought a round-trip train ticket to Klamath Falls, picked up a bundle of sage at the Ferry Plaza Farmers Market, and prayed to Wakantanka to guide me wherever I needed to be. I love trains, and this journey was no exception. I boarded the Iron Horse in Emeryville after a short bus trip from San Francisco at about 10 o'clock at night. The atmosphere outside the station was magic, waiting for me to step onto the train and back inside the mystery of travel. I settled into my seat, placed my duffel bag and backpack on the empty space next to me, and watched the passing industrial parks until the buildings became sparse and the land opened up into flat stretches of farms. The sky was clear and the moon seemed to follow the train until I fell asleep to dreams of Marionberry pie and crisp apple cider. I awoke while it was still dark but could see bright dawn peeking her head through the now diffused blanket covering the earth. I got out my headphones and put in my new CD. The music began to play, fusing perfectly with the fading darkness. I awoke with my headphones still on and pressed play. The atmosphere of night was diffusing into dawn. As we passed Mount Shasta, the song I was listening to built to a dramatic climax as the sun broke through the sky, spotlighting its rays down upon the magnetic height of the mountain. There is no amount of money that could buy for me the moment I spent on that train, passing Mount Shasta at dawn with my headphones on. I felt all of the emotion of the previous year of learning and healing. It broke loose and went flooding through my body, releasing up and out into the aura of that illustrious mountain. I let my emotion flow from within me, while outside my window Mount Shasta emanated her golden glow. In a little while, the other passengers began to stir as the cabin was flooded with morning light. There is an intimacy that builds on a train between passengers after they have spent the night together stealing through small, dusty towns and hinterlands known only to the hawks and field mice among brushy midnight fields. Upon waking, you feel a camaraderie with those who traverse the land in this slow, time-honored way. A train is grounding. It allows you to slowly feel the length of the journey connecting to itself through winding track distance. Your consciousness is allowed to gradually adjust and expand with the land to the oncoming location. The train pulled into Klamath Falls in mid-morning. A few of us got off and stretched our legs. The town was desolate save for one man standing next to a van. "Do you want a lift on the Bend Express?" he asked. "Sure," I replied. One other guy agreed to a ride as well, so the three of us headed off together towards Bend. I had heard of Bend. I knew there was a hostel there that would probably have free beds, this being midweek and all. The driver was a salmon fisherman and a salmon smoker. He gave both of us a piece of salmon jerky. It was chewy, salty, and made my mouth salivate. The driver told us that during fishing season he catches a few hundred pounds of salmon, and that income, along with driving this shuttle, sustains him. His sons were also salmon fishermen, he said with a smile. He was very proud they had followed him into the family business. He let me off on a main road a little outside of downtown because the other man was in a rush to meet some people at a hunting lodge. I walked about a mile with my backpack and duffel, passing under a wonderful graffitied railroad trestle, and eventually wound up at the hostel. It was a converted hotel, restaurant, microbrewery, and hostel with colorful murals adorning the memory-soaked wooden walls. I would be the only guest in the hostel tonight. The space was large, with 12 beds. I picked one and stored my bags in the locker. I wandered around Bend for a while and stopped at another microbrewery with an outside garden area. When I was in Berlin one summer, I developed a love for beer gardens. I had chosen a porter on this, the first day of my trip, because I wanted that chocolate caramel chewiness to swirl around the inside of my mouth. As I sat and drank my beer, the sun began to show signs of waning. I finished my beer and walked over to one of the famous local buttes, basically a small dirt mountain, climbed up and looked out over the town of Bend, situated smack dab in the Oregon high desert. Then I climbed back down as the sky turned iridescent pink, orange, and red. A classic desert sunset. The place I was staying had a very intimate bar hidden among the garden. There were only a couple of tables situated around an old fireplace that sent warmth and red glow out into the tiny candlelit room. Earlier, when I was walking around the town, I had gone into an esoteric shop and for some strange reason noticed a flyer for a local girl who gave tarot card readings. I gave her a call and we agreed to meet at this magic little hideaway at the booth closest to the fireplace. I had only had one tarot card reading in my life. It was the last time I lived in St. Augustine, right before moving back to San Francisco to attend holistic health school. That reading had bewildered me because the cards and the guy interpreting them seemed to know everything that was going on in my life at the time. I was also a very open and willing participant in that reading, and I think that had a lot to do with it. Any space can be a signpost if you are open to reading the signs. This Ben tarot reader was young, maybe in her early 20s. She was a go-go dancer who did tarot readings whenever spirit moved people to find her. She loved doing tarot readings and only charged $10 for them. She did not like dancing and was thinking about working at the local movie theater instead, but, she explained, the money is much better at the club. The few other patrons in the place were guys and they kept looking over at us. I guess they had never seen a go-go dancer doing a tarot reading at a bar before. This reading was more obtuse than acute, though. It gave me an overall view of what exactly my life was at that moment, what this trip was. It was a preparation, a ceremonial make-ready that would infuse me with the power for more demanding situations later with regards to an ultimate distillation. That's what I got out of it anyway. More than anything, she was entertaining and we both truly enjoyed ourselves. Then, she left, and I finished my amber ale and headed back to fall asleep in my huge empty room, which little did I know was filled with dreams and omens. That night I dreamt of a large white horse walking through a small field to a clear spring. The horse dipped his head down and drank of the water. There was steam rising from the pool. Then the horse looked back at me and slowly walked up into the mountains. As I walked towards the edge of the field, I came upon a place saturated with blackberry bushes. In front of me, a small mountain path ascended in switchbacks. Then I woke up. In the morning, I took a stroll around Bend and decided to leave. My night had been fruitful, but my intuition said to move on. The bus station was about a mile away and took me about 20 minutes to walk over there with my bags slung on my back. I perused the schedules and bought a ticket to Salem. This journey would take me over and through the mountains to the eastern side of Oregon. Then, in Salem, I would transfer from my small bus to a larger one and head down to Medford. Fate and luck were on my side. There was only one other passenger on my small bus. I sat there in awe as we rolled through little mountain towns and then up and over and down the mountains again. At one point, I thought I saw two hawks waltzing in the sky. When we arrived in Salem, the bus station was fairly empty. I had an hour to pass, so I strolled around the quaint downtown, bought some fresh bread, and sat down and ate in a park. I remember that my Athens, Georgia poetess comrade Chloe had spent 1 year in Salem living with her aunt and uncle. She had liked it, but eventually grew tired of the rain. The bus from Salem to Medford was packed with people going down to San Francisco and Los Angeles. When we stopped for a short break in Eugene, the station was filled with drifters, young kids with bandanas and rucksacks and older guys with bottles of alcohol and Goodwill duffel bags. I was drifting as well. I boarded the bus, settled in, sat back, looked out the window, and listened to the conversations. What stories we drifters can tell. There was no need for my headphones. I had all the entertainment I needed for hours. We pulled into Medford at a little after 9 o'clock at night. I walked off the bus and grabbed my rucksack from the underneath compartment. I looked out into the street. I was just about to sit down against the building and ponder my situation in the fresh moonlight when a very young, pretty girl asked me, "Well, what are you going to do now?" "Are you talking to me?" I asked. "You're the one looking perplexed, aren't you?" Not only was this girl very pretty, but she was intelligent and had a sarcastic sense of humor. As a Jersey boy, I appreciated that. "I haven't figured that out yet," I answered. "Well," she said, "I came here to collect my sister, and now I'm heading off to Ashland. Would you like to go?" Ashland. My friend Michael Murphy had told me that he had once come across this town on a trip up the coast from San Francisco. He told me it was quite charming and had a nice downtown. I thought to myself for a second, "Yeah, I'll go to Ashland. That's good, because that's where I'm going." She had an old, beat-up, small blue car. The seat stuffing was spilling out and the seat belts didn't work. But it was a ride with two young, pretty girls who had nomadic souls like mine. The girl driving was the older sister of the girl riding in the back. The girl driving lived in Ashland. The girl riding in the back had just moved here from the mountains of Tennessee to live with her big sister. Where were their parents? Who knows? They were here, giving me a lift. "So where do you want to go in Ashland?" the girl driving asked. "I don't know. Are there any hot springs there?" "You're joking, right?" she responded. "Why?" "Because there's a great place right outside of town where I actually used to live for a while, and you can camp there or stay in a teepee if you like. It's a really special place," she replied. "Okay, let's go." We drove towards the springs, and I could feel my body becoming loose and happy with anticipation of a morning soak. In a short time, we arrived. The girl driving gave me a hug and said, "Be sure and soak it all in. And in the morning, when you wake up, go and pick some blackberries for breakfast. There's tons of them out in the back of the property by the hills." I gave her a hug, and her sister slapped me five from the back seat, and they were off, and I had arrived. I could smell the minerals of the spring water in the air. I love that smell. The smell of elements commingling together. Water, earth, air. I went into the office, which was about to close, and rented a teepee for the next 8 days. It was very reasonable and included use of the springs, the sauna, and the natural showers. As I walked to my lodging, I looked up at the moon and the stars, which I hardly ever saw in San Francisco. They were bedazzling in their clarity and luminescence. The moon was large and orange-tinted. The harvest was approaching. I could sense the apples vibrating on the trees. The teepee was fairly large and very tall, with an opening at the top that could be adjusted with two long poles. There was a deep fire pit in the center of the space. I put my backpack and rucksack down and laid my sleeping bag out with a sweatshirt for a pillow. Then I retrieved a small flashlight from my backpack and headed out to scrounge up enough firewood to get me through what had now become a very chilly Oregon October night. Gathering firewood proved easier than I thought, and within about an hour I had a vibrant fire heating my teepee. I took out some sage and threw it onto the flames. The smoke smudged through me, cleansing all of the conversation I had heard on the bus trip out of my psyche and allowing me to be present with the fire and the sublime beauty of the smoke filtering out of the small hole at the top. The smoke was the essence of the fire burned and releasing up and back out into the wilderness. It was all a very deep, natural blessing bestowed upon me, a beautiful chain of events that led me exactly where I wanted to be, cozy by the fire, up in the fall, in Oregon. After a blissful sleep, I woke up and started a fire to boil some water for tea and keep me warm when I came back from my soak. In San Francisco, I had blended a very nice tea for myself: fennel seeds, cinnamon bark, sarsaparilla root, and saw palmetto berries. I sat by the fire on a little bench I had made from a wooden plank and two cinder blocks I had found the previous night while collecting firewood. I sipped my tea, letting the herbs infuse their flavor and sense of earth deep into my body. While partaking in my tea, I remembered what the girl who had given me a ride here had said about there being blackberries growing on the back of the property. I made my way out of the teepee into the dazzling morning light warming the valley. The air was crisp and friendly, tempered by the rays of the sun. After a short time, I came to a bunch of blackberry bramble growing along a small service road. There were tons of the tiny, dark, purple jewels clinging to the bushes. I plucked one from its root and put it in my mouth. I let it sit there, feeling its shape, its texture, allowing its color to saturate my tongue. Then I bit into the dark berry and it burst all over my taste buds, tart and sweet, like life in its most simple moments. All was right with the world as I stood on the side of the road in Oregon, picking and eating blackberries. All of a sudden, I remembered the dream I had at the hostel in Bend of the white horse dipping his head into the springs to drink and then heading off into a small switchback trail by a row of blackberry bushes. I looked around me. I was there. It all made sense. All of it. Life, the journey, arrival, what departure really is to one presently on their path, pilgrimage, travel, movement, stillness, roots, contemplation, fruit, harvest, autumn, the fall. I spent the next 5 days wandering around the small hills, soaking in the spring waters, hitchhiking into the quaint downtown, eating marionberry pies, drinking soft and hard apple ciders, writing poetry, sipping local apple brandy, and partaking in various seasonal microbrews. Then my friend Jack arrived and we drank some homemade absinthe his girlfriend had made in our teepee into the wee hours of the night, watching the smoke from our fire journey up and out of the planted canvas shelter into the great holy hole of sky and universe, wrapping our bodies like a blanket inside this earthly dream of organic mystery and its individual incantations of wholeness and wonder. When I arrived back in San Francisco, I gave the Raw restaurant a month's notice. I had completed with that time in my life, with going undercover to understand the radical natures of small spaces and specialized languages, with acute practices. Life was, and had always been, open to everyone. No exceptions. It was big enough for all of us, yet infinitely intimate, if we allowed it to be.